in media advertising. Admirable, but the real cause of inflation is government deficit spending. That might sound a little bit abstract and a little bit hard to understand, but we have to face it. We can't hide from it. And deficit spending, government spending on projects which are unnecessary, such as the $70 million office building that's being put in Anchorage, uses up manpower, uses up material and resources which are scarce, and makes it harder for private enterprise to build the pipeline. That makes more competition for wages, or on wages for people and for resources. The real cure to inflation, and the only cure to inflation, is to stop government spending. We're spending $16 to $18 billion a year now on foreign aid to buy friendship. We haven't bought a friend yet. We've bought a lot of enemies. We're setting up steel plants over in Japan and West Germany to compete with our own steel plants and knock our own workers out of a job, to set up foreign fishing fleets that come in here and rape our fisheries and put our own fishermen in a very bad circumstance, as witness Bristol Bay. So the cure for inflation has to be at the federal government level. It has to be the stopping of deficit spending. It has to be done in Congress.
On a state level, do you feel then that
I'm afraid at the present time that it would. We haven't, of course, heard or seen a definitive study on what it's going to cost to move the capital. I think at one time we probably had enough money to move the capital when we had our $900 million of all these bonus sales. Some $650 or $700 million of that has now been spent, or at least $600 million of that has been spent. So we might not have the money to move the capital. In fact, we don't have at the present time. Everyone's looking forward to the money coming from the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, from the oil that comes out the end of it. That's what our whole economy is based on. And we're going to be in a serious financial bite in this state unless, or until, we get that money coming out from the end of the pipeline.
A few moments ago, you mentioned the rape of our fisheries. What do you think can be done in Washington to get fisheries back on their feet? The AFN has petitioned to get a deal going whereby the fines that were collected on foreign vessels coming in and taking our fish would be put back into that industry rather than into just anything. But what more substantial thing can be done to put the fisheries back in business?
Well, I'm a strong advocate of trying to get our fisheries back in business and keep us in the fishing business. That's what built Alaska over the many years of the salmon industry. And actually, in modern day circumstances, we almost have to become a giant fish farm. We have to have saltwater rearing pens, gravel incubators, and stream clearance, stream rehabilitation, do everything that can be done. And it's not too mysterious about what can be done to rehabilitate our fisheries. We have to spend the money to do it and go ahead and do it. And of course, on the federal level, we're looking at the 200-mile limit. I favor the 200-mile limit. This is not a new idea. There have been bills in for years to establish a 200-mile limit. There's one in right now. Both of our United States senators support it, and I support it. Given, of course, the control of our species fish, that is our salmon, which are born in our streams, go out in 4 years, come back. We must have control of them because they go beyond the 200-mile limit. Foreign nation that grabs them out there, our 200-mile limit wouldn't mean much. So I support that, but they've been years and they haven't been able to obtain it. So there is such a thing as a 100-fathom limit, which actually would establish the limit at about the end of the continental shelf. It would be much easier to enforce, and it would be effective. It would give us, really, our continental shelf fisheries, and I think it would be a more practical approach than the 200-mile limit, which we haven't been able to get so far.
You mentioned
on farming
that
we do, but we have.
We can't think as far as 10 years like a lot of the other. I don't think we can think 10 years ahead like a lot of the other candidates. A lot of people are talking about what's going to happen in 10 years. I just don't think that we can see that far ahead. But I don't see that we can just take all these little bitty bitty approaches. There's going to be some.
Well, we can't do too much planning. We can't plan every detail. Give the government.
Mr. C.R. Lewis was running for United States Senate, and just this week it finally came out as Now I'd like to introduce to you, without any further words, Mr. C.R. Lewis, candidate for United States Senate.
Thank you very much, Sailor. I want to bring a number of things to your attention today. First thing I want to call your attention to is my coat. It's a double net, blue with light threads and dark threads, a matching tie over a blue shirt. Call this to your attention because I was invited to Anchorage, or to Fairbanks a few weeks ago to attend a dance festival here and to make a few remarks from the stage of the dance festival. So it seemed to me that a dance festival is a rather festive occasion, and it was an evening occasion. I thought perhaps formal, so I wore a black suit that I was very proud of, white shirt, black and white tie, and I was quite proud of my dress. the next day, and in fact, I don't know if it was the next day, it might have been even that night, I started getting telephone calls. That I was going to have to get out of these funeral director's clothes. I was going to have to come into the 20th century. I was going to have to get with it. And if I wanted to vote as a modern Republican, I was going to have to be at least somewhat modern. In fact, there was a clothes committee established. Two of this prestigious committee are here, Ellen Ring and Glenda Spann. There was another member, I've forgotten his name, but he happened to own a clothing store. I know. In fact, as a kind of a come-on, I was given a present of a very loud, flashy sports shirt, which I would have worn, except that they got it one size too small. Anyway, I felt it appropriate that I bring the attention of the new modern Republicans here, the new modern candidate they had, and the blue sport coat. Seriously, I'm happy to be here. It's always a pleasure to come to Fairbanks. I've told you a number of times we've spoken here, and I sincerely mean it. I won't make a long speech today or presentation. It's going to be brief, and one of the reasons it's going to be brief is that while I've spoken in public a number of times, I've of late gotten a little bit self-conscious about it. I was invited out to API not long ago. For those of you who in Fairbanks might not know what API is, it's Alaska Psychiatric Institute. Wait a minute now, I was invited out to speak. To speak, not to reside, or not to, and to speak to the inmates too, not to the, psychiatrist. The thought being that some of these inmates just sat around and moped all day, and if they had a public figure come and speak to them, it might jar them out of their lethargy and apathy. So I went out and spoke to them. They were mostly women. And I hadn't...
He's lost a little bit. Between the five Republicans and the women, you haven't got many left.
I would recall that remark if I could. It cannot ring a bell, so I'll not try to. It just happened that there were mostly women in this class. And as I started to speak, one of them got up and she said, "You're a lousy speaker." And I took that in stride and went on, and a couple of sentences later she said, "You're a lousy speaker." Well, I didn't think too much of that, but I went on anyway. And the third time, she said, "You're a lousy speaker." And I turned to the psychiatrist beside me. I was going to tell him that I didn't have to do this. I was invited out here, and if I was considered such a lousy speaker, I'd just go back to town. But he was staring at her. His eyes were riveted on her. And I said, "Is something the matter?" And he said, "In the 2.5 years that woman has been here, that's the first thing she said that made any sense." So I won't make too much of this. I won't make this speech too long, if it is a speech. I'm just to run down quickly over the issues that face us today in the state. I think in Fairbanks, probably the number one issue is land use and land release. In a state of 576,000 square miles or so, hard to get a lot to build on. Ketchikan, they're really uptight about it. They tell me that if they could get the land, there'd be a building boom in Ketchikan. I know in my town of Anchorage, it's hard to get land to build on. And I think probably here in Fairbanks, in this great wide valley, you're experiencing the same thing. In fact, I'm sure that you are, because of all the indications that we have that the land use and land release is of such a concern to the Fairbanks and Alaska people. It's certainly of a concern to me. I think that the land should be in the hands of the people, and that those in public office, those running for public office, should do the best that they can do to get it into the hands of the public people, out of the hands of the federal government, and out of the hands of the state government. When they tie up 80 million acres, that's certainly too much. When they tie up 140 million acres, it's unconscionable. Another issue, and the main issue as far as I'm concerned, and I think as far as most Alaskan people are concerned today, is the pipeline. The pipeline must be built. The state budget is built upon the pipeline, upon the expected income from the
pipeline, everything that we did in the last legislature, in the Finance Committee and elsewhere, was predicated upon oil coming out the end of that pipeline and the revenue that we would get therefrom. Everything in the Fairbanks area depends on that. University of Alaska support, local government, revenue sharing, your support of your local law enforcement effort, your fire departments, even medical and relief effort, manpower training for the new pipeline jobs that we all expect to come, depend on our state budget predicated on eventual high revenues coming from the pipeline. Even the food stamp program depended on revenue from the pipeline. So we'd better get the pipeline flowing. If the interest gets any higher, money gets any harder to get, some of us might be on food stamps. We're looking at 15% interest rate down in Anchorage now, and I guess you're probably looking at the same here. And that's pretty hard for a businessman to stay in business. The pipeline, of course, has built in enabling legislation many harassments, many areas by which the construction companies can be harassed. I think that's a prime consideration for those in public office to see that construction people are not harassed out of the business. We read in the morning paper that the state shut down the Hall Road. I think in this case it was probably good to glacial lens there was being cut into and washing the road away, and I think it was probably good. The contractors do need watching. Alyeska needs watching, I'm convinced of that, but they do not need harassing. It's estimated that as much as 36% of the cost of this pipeline and attendant construction will come right out of our pockets, right out of tax dollars. In which case, we want to be careful that we do not add to the cost unnecessarily by harassment and slowdown of the construction of the line. As far as the Trans-Alaska gas line is concerned, I favor the Trans-Alaska gas line. I think all Alaska legislators and office holders should favor it. I have so far seen no reason in the world why we should even consider the line across Canada. It's said that there will be more money in the state treasury if this happens. I think that's a great big maybe. I seriously question that. And while we may need more money in the state treasury, it seems that we always do, where we really need money is in the hands of the people. And I think the people will have more chance of getting their some portion of this newfound wealth of our state if our Alaska, or if our gas line is actually a Trans-Alaska gas line. We'll give the basis needed for a chemical industry, which is possible in Alaska, which is a capital-intensive industry. Gives us a good base, a solid base, a deep base for taxes, for local government, and it is not labor-intensive. While we want jobs for our workers, this does not have the disadvantage of attracting swarms of labor from outside of our state. Another issue that is certainly worthy of consideration of all people of the state, especially people running for office, is that of refining the state in kind oil in our state. We have had proposals from private entrepreneurs for setting up refinery, refining the state in kind oil, and they're talking in sums in terms of $500,000 a day revenue to the state. That is certainly worth talking about. It's certainly a very considerable income, and one that should not be brushed off, and I don't think will be brushed off. While we're talking about issues and economic issues, I believe that we should not neglect the salmon industry. I know that that is not as important an issue in Fairbanks, Alaska as it is in Ketchikan or Sitka, but it is still very important. Alaska is famous, of course, number one industry for many, many years. And government activities, while I'm always in favor of limiting them, you can't eliminate them. There are areas in which they are useful, and one of them should be in doing the best that can be done to make a fish farm out of our state of Alaska. That is the portion which is adaptable to fish farming, our lakes and streams. If we do so, I think we should do everything that we can, and I intend to do everything that I can, to promote saltwater rearing pens, gravel incubators. If you'll pardon that expression. Gravel. stream clearance, stream maintenance, and the setting up of non-profit private corporations to the extent that they can further the development of the fish farm in Alaska. The number one issue, or one of the very top issues in our state, high prices and inflation, one that plagues our state and the entire nation, must be faced, recognized, and solved or resolved. It must be dealt with knowledgeably. But it is real. When girls are elected out or hired out of my office or my competitor's office for $1,500 a month, and when I am having trouble keeping men at $12 an hour, then inflation is with us, real way, and this appears to be just the beginning. It has to be dealt with, has to be dealt with on a government level. As I mentioned earlier, businessmen are paying in some cases up to 15% interest. It's extremely difficult to run a business when you borrow money and pay 15% interest. Those of you who are in business, I'm sure know that. Those of you who are not in business, won't find it hard to understand. Of course, everyone deplores inflation, and all are affected by inflation. But the first affected and the worst affected are the elderly, those on fixed incomes, and those on low incomes. It must be opposed and combated, not with wage and price control, the political expedient that we've seen from Washington for the last few years, in which has been so ineffective. Wage and price controls are no weapon against inflation. Inflation is an increase in money and credit. If you look in the dictionary, you find that inflation is an increase in money and credit resulting in a sharp rise in prices. This rise in prices and this wage price spiral that you hear so much about and that you see and that you're affected by and that my company is affected by and that I mentioned just a minute ago is the result of inflation. It is not the cause of inflation. The result of inflation, the cause of inflation is one thing, and that's government printing press money. The culprit is one person, one entity, and that's the federal government. Nobody else can cause inflation. If we in the state of Alaska start cranking out money, we couldn't do it. If you or I did it, we would be convicted as counterfeiters. The only entity that can do it is the federal government. That's where it must stop. Money, this new money that is printed by the billions of dollars, acquires value only by reducing the value of the money presently in circulation. That's the reason for the high prices. The vehicle used to introduce this new money into the economy is deficit financing, deficit spending in Congress. These huge deficits, the federal government each year, billions of dollars of deficit, are the cause of inflation. And when you find a politician pointing with pride to a $70 million federal building, at the same time deploring inflation, you find a politician who's talking on both sides of his mouth. Or if he isn't, he doesn't know what's going on. Not worthy of the job that he's holding. We have a $70 million federal office building, which is going to be built in Anchorage, to house some of our presently existing 13.8 to 15.6 million federal employees. Nobody that I have been able to determine knows how many employees there are on the federal payroll. We have figures from 13.8 to 15.6 million. That's a spread of nearly 2 million, depending on which source you go to. We tried to find out how many boards, bureaus, commissions, and so forth there were, and nobody would even attempt to answer that question. The federal government is definitely out of control. But I getting off the subject a little bit, this $70 million federal building will house some of those 15.6 or more million employees, and probably house a great deal more. They'll have to hire more federal employees to fill the building up. It'll empty the rentals and empty at the present time, or at least place an awful drain on them. It won't be a help to our economy. It'll be a definite hindrance. It'll draw upon our shortage, our already short skilled help. Even now, we're finding a difficult supply. Yet, we have a politician, you all know who he is, seeking re-election to the U.S. Senate. This is one of his major accomplishments that he's pointing to, is this $70 million federal office building, while at the same time, he's decoring inflation. So, if I'm accurate in my assessment that he's talking out of both sides of his mouth, or that he doesn't really know what he's talking about, what does this do to his credibility? As far as I'm concerned, it reduces it to practically zero. The same man that's our president, United States Senator, Junior Senator, while deploring inflation and pointing with pride, is also telling us on the radio and television that private enterprise is the answer. We have to get back to private enterprise and reduce the size of government. Yet the voting record shows that he's voted for every big spender program that has come along and co-sponsored. He points with pride to co-sponsoring bills which actually harass private enterprise. So the problem of question of credibility arises. It's the same problem. I'm talking to Republicans now, but I guess it'll see the press back there. It'll probably go out over the press. This is the same politician who was elected as a hawk. Shortly after being elected as a hawk, he converted to a super dove and equated the divulging of classified military information with exposing secrecy in politics, and shielded from investigation those who transmitted the Pentagon information to him. He's now calling for impeachment of the president on the grounds of secrecy. At the same time, he's claiming credit for construction of the pipeline, for removing the roadblocks from the construction of the pipeline. And at the same time, while he claims credit for removing the roadblocks and the construction of the pipeline, in his book, Citizen Power, A People's Platform, he points with pride to authoring the bill under which the pipeline was delayed for 5 years. Again, a definite lack of credibility is apparent. And credibility, of course, brings us as Republicans to Watergate. Serious question with us, those of us who are running for office find that it is. Watergate can be either a stepping block or a stumbling block or a stepping stone, depending on how we approach it. And I would like to read a few words from remarks that I made here in Fairbanks a year or so ago to a Republican convention regarding the Republican Party. I said at that time, individual liberties and individual rights are essential to a free people and must be maintained by passage and enforcement of just laws to protect those liberties. Freedom of religion, freedom of press, freedom of assembly, freedom of speech, freedom to keep and bear arms are the precepts upon which our nation was conceived and born and must be maintained. The Republican Party unequivocally supports these constitutionally guaranteed freedoms of choice. The Republican Party is dedicated to the constitutional separation of powers within government, the checks and balances between executive, judicial, and legislative branches, and the diffusion of powers to the states and away from the centralized power structure. I think that's quite an accurate, short depiction of the Republican Party and of the people who make up the Republican Party. I believe that most of us believe in those principles. There's nothing in there which comports with Watergate, or which would accept Watergate as a Republican operation. It does not square with the Republican Party or square with the thinking of Republican people. So what do we do about it as Republicans here on the grassroots level here in Alaska? My answer is that we field representatives who are above reproach. They cannot be accused of secrecy or financial dealings under the table. Who have unquestionable records, cannot be assailed in any form. I'm not going to enlarge on that. I think it tells the story pretty much as best I can tell it. As Mr. Saylor said, I am a candidate for the United States Senate. I want to ask all of you here today for your support, for your vote. And I want to tell you that in running, I don't need the job. I've got a job. I don't need the money. I don't need the wages. I'm not an extremely wealthy man, but I don't need the money that I would earn as a United States Senator. I don't need the career. Career, private enterprise. I don't need the name or the prestige. I feel that service in state government and national government is an obligation on the part of the citizen. And certainly I feel it's an obligation on my part to the state, which has been good to me, the nation that's been good to me. I feel that there's a real need there. Need for someone who is not obligated, not owned by anyone, will speak out on the issues, speak the truth as he sees it. I think it was Lincoln that prayed for strength to do right as God gave him to see the right. That's what we need in the United States Senate, as elsewhere, someone there dedicated to doing right as he sees what is right to be done, not under constraint or obligation to any person or any group of people or any financing group. I mentioned that I did not need the name or the prestige. The reason that I feel constrained to go to the United States Senate is because I have 6 kids. The youngest is 3, the oldest is 14. I live in a world of kids, and of course they're the most important thing in the world to me. And I would like to leave them, want to leave them, the same opportunity that I had growing up in this country and in this state, unlimited opportunity, limited only by my own abilities, my own willingness to work and strive. It's a great state, a great country. I'm proud to serve in it and do my best in Washington. I thank you for listening to me today. If you have any questions, I know it's a little after one, we tried to make it short. If you have any questions, I will attempt to field them and field them. And I thank you very much for listening.
Have any questions, please be free to go ahead.
What would you do specifically to reduce the cost of the federal government, to reduce these federal expenditures, which you say then would reduce inflation?
Well, the areas of reducing that government are broad and expansive. The first thing I would approach would be foreign aid, going $16 to $18 billion in foreign aid per year, which is a large portion of our deficit spending. This money is going overseas, purportedly to buy us friends. It hasn't bought us a friend in the world. All it's done is buy us enemies, built up fishing fleets to come in and take our fisheries away, rape our fisheries, build steel plants over in Japan and West Germany, which are now shipping steel into our country, shutting our own steel mills down, reducing our employment, wrecking our economy. That would be the first place that I would want to start.
Are there any other questions? Any announcements for next week?
some more people, huh?
To file for legislature.
Well, I don't know unless it's just a matter of putting in the time to pounding the concrete and beating the bushes to try and impress on them the extreme necessity of the right people in government. This 15% interest has really hit me, and it's such things as this that it seemed like have to impress people, certainly business people, who have to realize that they can stay here and make all the money in the world, but the government can take it away from them faster than they can make it. I think those people just have to be approached to the basis that the best return for their dollar is right in the government.
My name is Greg.
I'm sorry. I don't leave, so I'll leave
you with
Greg.
Peace. Didn't mean to chase you off. No, that's fine. I was just trying to find an excuse to kind of buzz off anyway. I'm kind of late. So
did you come up, or did you just get trapped in, mouse trapped into this?
Well, you know, I come to these luncheons every once in a while, and you seem to have quite a draw that most of the other lunches didn't have, so I got pushed back here in the corner.
Oh, that's it. Wow.
We'll see you later.
That's it.
I hear you're doing pretty strong down in Anchorage.
Yeah.
Andy said that, and one of the other candidates told me his polls showed it too.
How was that?
Really be. One of the other candidates told me the poll he took recently down there showed you it was strong with the returns.
About his poll? That his poll had shown that?
Yeah.
You going to dinner tonight?
I don't think I'll make it, no. So, well, I'll see you next time, Connie.
Okay.
I'll get those pictures in the mail.
All right, I doubt that I'll make it tonight. They dance, and I'm not in no condition. We're not in any condition to dance.
Oh, come on.
Oh, yeah, I forgot that.
A couple of spry young sprouts, like you said.
Issue at Bell.
You gave me enough to go on last time. I don't know if you wanted to add to that, it would be fine. Do you have any response to what Rebell said in his campaign keynote address last weekend?
I'm sorry to report I didn't hear it. What did he say?
Well, he said that he got the pipeline for us.
No.
I could at least walk in front of him and say, follow
me. Well, just what I mentioned in the speech is that while he's saying he got the pipeline for us, to another constituency, he boasts that he co-authored the bill, voted for the bill, that held it up for 5 years. If you're looking at people's power there, the program for the citizen power, a program for the people, you'll find that boast. Have you seen that book?
No. You found a copy.
Yeah, I found a copy.
We have one, but I haven't read it yet.
No. I haven't located that passage. You didn't find it in that book. It's in there.
It looks like it.
Yeah, it starts. Typical.
That's the way it should end.
Yeah.
What is that thing like?
Bullshit.
You answered in your speech just about everything I wanted to get you with it. That pepper thing, so I'm all set.
Okay.
I'm going to wander over to the Hickle headquarters. Grand opening as well.
Oh, yeah, the grand opening there?
Yeah.
Is that all day, or?
Well, it's 2 to 4:30. Yeah, your campaign's really got a lot of steam. Everybody else seems to be kind of rolling around. And
yeah.
Is you're the only one we hear from.
Well, it's not fast enough to suit us, but at least we think we're ahead of our competition.
Yeah, what's your thinking on the special session?
Well, I think the governor called it as a political move. He wants to be known as an active, moving, doing governor. And I think that's about all I can think of to do.
Do you think there's going to be fight over the his objection to the legislative board running the impact program rather than his administration bringing some of the other
people. I don't think it'll overpower the legislature.
Some of the other people I talked to from the place thought that would be the major debating point.
I don't think he has a horse to overpower the legislature. I didn't like the bill myself. You know, I was the one who voted against it in the Senate.
Why didn't you like it?
Well, it just put too much power and authority in the President of the Senate and the Speaker of the House. Too much of a political goodie bag at their disposal.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
And that may have been what the governor didn't like about it, too.
Yeah. That fits in kind of with a lot of other people are trying. Okay.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you're getting good reports on the campaign.
Yeah.
You ain't seen nothing yet.
We'll have to see what happens. Everybody else gets rolling. Gee, it just seems like nobody's doing anything at all.
Is Terry Miller filed?
Yeah, he filed yesterday afternoon.
I understand he hasn't been too active up here.
No, he told me he's organizing an office and a really active campaign in Anchorage.
Mm-hmm.
And up here he's going to have just a volunteer organization evidently and do a lot of flesh pressing and stuff like that. And not a whole lot of media stuff, even though he really counts on carrying Fairbanks heavily to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
But, he's sure going to have to get around. Get out here.
He's got a lot of ground to cover in Anchorage.
Yeah, he does. Somebody told me that they were planning a month or a month and a half of different circuits around there. Routine and stuff. So, I imagine when he shakes off the special session, he's getting rolling. It's just that running his type of campaign, your campaign organization can run through the special session and probably not even miss a beat. But if he's running a person-to-person campaign, he's going to have a hard time doing it from Juneau for 2 weeks, with Jim. And not to mention getting over that for a week and so on.
Okay, well, good seeing you.
Well, it was nice to meet you, Tom.
Senator Lewis, you're appointed in the Republican primary in August. It will be Senator Terry Miller, and he's a resident of the interior. How do you think you will fare in the interior?
Well, I think I'll fare fairly well. I see Fairbanks, and the Fairbanks area is a crucial area for me. I intend to spend a lot of time campaigning here. Have many friends in Fairbanks. Expect to even do some door-to-door work in Fairbanks.
How will you be organizing your campaign as far as the your approach? Will we be using media advertising or will we be focusing on door-to-door?
We'll use both. We'll do everything that can be done to win an election. That includes, of course, door-to-door work, media advertising, such as television, radio, and newspaper, and personal approach wherever possible. I will spend as much time here personally as I can.
One of your items in your press release of your candidacy was a voice of moderation to be brought to the U.S. Senate. Could you explain that?
Well, yes, I can. Voice of moderation. We have taken polls, of course, and we understand what the issues are that concern the Alaskan people. And in every case, they comport almost exactly with my positions on the same issues over the years in the Alaska legislature and basically my philosophy. There will be a voice of moderation. Back in Washington, we won't have a senator that pickets the White House, who nominates himself for vice president, who reads military papers at midnight, equates classified military information with political secrecy. You'll have a voice of moderation working for the people of Alaska for the matters of concern which are burdening them.
Your campaign is going to be interrupted by a special session Governor Regan has called. What is your opinion of that special session?
Well, I think Governor Egan, if I may say so, Governor Egan is behind in the polls. I believe that he wants to be known as an activist governor, a busy sort of a guy that gets things done, and this is one of the things that's going to get done. It's called a special session. I don't really think it's necessary. However, politically, it may or may not be a good move for the governor.
One of the reasons he cited as calling a special session was that he wasn't happy with the way that the money, the pipeline impact money, was being distributed. What's your opinion on how it should be distributed?
Well, I have to agree with him to a certain degree on that. There were several alternative methods that we had for distributing this pipeline impact money. One was through his local affairs committee. The other was through the special committee appointed by the president of the Senate and the Speaker of the House, which is the way we did go. The third alternative would have been to do it through the Budget and Audit Committee, which I think was the ideal place, the ideal vehicle for distributing these pipeline impact committees.
And finally, what is your opinion of the recent action of Alaska Airlines in opposing the triangle fare of Western Airlines?
Well, it looks to me like Alaska Airlines has somebody in the CAB that's looking after Alaska Airlines and is determined that Alaska Airlines is going to make money and be successful in the airlines business and doesn't give a hang about Western Airlines.
Thank you.